chapter 13, one of the most famous chapters out of the Bible. We're going to be talking about love today. This is going to be a participating sermon today. I'd like you to find something to write with or write on. It may be your device, maybe you've got a notepad on there, or the who's who in the pew do on the back of that. But for the next 2 minutes, off the top of your mind, no editing, just everything that comes to mind, write down things you love. Things you love, right? 2 minutes you got. Many things as you can list. I love this and I love that. Things you really enjoy, things you really love. Now we're at a minute there, so I'll just give you another 15 seconds. How's that? All right. Find anything, think of anything that you could put on your list. Let me, when I read over this, I thought, well, it must have been close to lunchtime, and it had to be a Tuesday, a study day for me. But I just off the top, and if I should have edited this to rearrange it, but I just want it to be raw, just like your list is. I love Denny's pancakes. Tuesdays, not the restaurant, the day. Puppies, grandkids, my wife, my Mustang, sunny days, summer, coconut, naps, pizza, church, barbecue, sports, friends, family, worship, prayer, the word, studying, preaching, teaching, writing, Scrabble, solitaire, a good movie, ripe fruit, reconnecting with old friends when it feels like we haven't missed a beat, winning, that feeling of accomplishment when you do something well, my wife's smile, a full moon, the morning sky, sunset, quiet, peace, an old song that takes me back to a good place, a memory that brings a tear about a loved one lost. That's as far as I got on my list. And were you able to come up with a list? There's a lot to love about life, isn't there? Really, when you stop and think about it, there's a lot to love. So my question for you today is, does love drive you? There's a lot to love. Is that the motor? When you wake up in the morning, do you wake up happy? Are you excited about what the possibilities are going to be? Or is there something else that grips you early? Guilt, worry, fear, ambition, anxiety? Transitioning from his teaching on gifts in 1 Corinthians 12, on into chapter 13, the chapter on love, Paul makes this statement, and now I will show you the most excellent way, best way to live, best way to be. We are what we are. We're going through what we're going through. And we can get better by the grace of God. He can help us. If we will get into our mind, I don't have to be stuck. It can be better. Then that's the first step. Lord, pastor's right. There's a lot to love about life. Why am I not loving it? Why doesn't that grip me? Why do these other things cast a shadow across that? Can you help me to get to where I'm enjoying it? Where there's peace, there's a feeling of accomplishment, and all that good stuff. That's what we're going to be asking God for today. Would you help me make whatever adjustments I need to in my operating system to get to a happier place in God, in life? 1 Corinthians chapter 13, the first three verses. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to the flames but do not have love, I gain nothing. So, Lord, sounds like from that list, we need love. We need love. We need to love. We need love. Would you help us with that quality today to focus on that, to be more filled with love than when we came in? And we'll thank you for your help here in Jesus' name. Amen. I believe the point that Paul is trying to drive home here is being gifted isn't enough. Chapter 12, all these gifts, he gives to them severally as he wills, as you need it will show up. You're going to have the strength. You're going to have whatever you need. But being gifted isn't enough to have a good life. There are many intelligent, talented, special people whose gifts are not producing the joy they should be in their lives. We stand back and we envy that person. Look at them. They're beautiful. Look at them. They're so talented. Look at them. They have so much. But then you talk to them, and it's not doing them any good. They may think that their superior intellect, their vast discoveries, huge accumulation of wealth, great feats on battlefields or sports arenas will ensure them a great life where others are going to flock to and adore them. I just read this morning where Andrew Luck retired, 29 years old, quarterback for the Colts. Had great success early on, but he's had a number of injuries in a row, and he just can't get back to it. And he said this cycle of rehab and then injury and pain and nobody really understanding what they just want him. Hey, they're paying you a lot of money. Go out there and perform. He just can't have. 29 years old, he walked away, and I felt sorry for the guy. Andrew Luck, and no luck in that at all for him. And we look at people and we judge them on the surface, and we could see what they should be thankful for, but somehow we can't turn that on ourselves. And people who make it, people who get there, their dreams are fulfilled. They become that person. They do the thing that they always wanted to do. They get the adoring fans. They find out that flocks make for poor relationships. Okay, the world is looking. The world wants a piece of me. And they find out it's not what it was cracked up to be. So many of these folk end up with a long list of ex-lovers, huge child support payments without the love from a real marriage or the adoration from kids that they've tucked in at night or coached through their very first steps. That leap from one adoring groupie to the next, finding no depth because every good relationship requires give and take, honest assessment, not blind adoration. Trying to build a fan club around yourself is a fool's game. Who likes me? What do they think about me? Why aren't I popular yet? And you don't have to be a rock star to get caught up in the pursuit of wanting other people's approval, wanting to be liked. You marry the girl that admired your home run swing and laughed at all your jokes. Married for 2 years, you find out she hates baseball and no longer thinks you're funny. The plan of both of you admiring you for the rest of your lives, it's not sustainable. And all this applies to church and spirituality. Sing like a robin, preach like an apostle, prophesy like Isaiah. Without love, our gifts will do more harm to the body of Christ than good. We have to love each other. One thing's been heavy on my heart. Recently, within the last 2 weeks, I've talked to at least 4 people, different circumstances, who have mentioned church people in a negative fashion. They're up to here with church people. While they're telling me, I'm thinking, you know I'm a pastor, right? And then I think, you're a church person too. And I know that the truth is, you know, I've lived in church my whole life. The finest people on the face of the earth are church people. They have cared, they have loved, they have given, they have poured out. And every once in a while, one of those fine church people will go rogue on us. They'll be a skunk. And oh, it'll stink the place up. And it'll hurt. They're a skunk with rabies. You know, they bite you as well as they stink up the place. And the devil just rejoices when we go away saying, church people. What we really should say is, a church person disappointed me. And man, I'm really ticked at them. But we put everybody else in that same category. Is that fair? Is that right? Yeah, those church, that Mother Teresa. Oh, man, what a pride. No, not everybody belongs. That Billy Graham. No. That Sam Marquette, you're just frying his eggs back there for everybody. Great guy. No, not everybody belongs in the skunk category. But I see the devil is getting in, and he's turning people's opinions. And once they get sour like that, then everything gets colored. Nobody can do anything right. They can't be pleased with it, and then they're done with church. Talked to a young man just this week. He said, I'm done with it all. I'm just done with that. And you could tell he was done with it. He had been part of our church. I'm just done with it. I'm doing my best to pray for him, to try and reach out, but it's going to have to take a decision in his heart to turn back again to Christ. We were talking in the prayer room, and Ray had shared a testimony of a fellow many years ago was a partner with Billy Graham. They started out as evangelists together, and many thought, we couldn't think of the name, but the other fellow was the more fiery of the evangelists. But he just got in his heart. There's too many suffering people in the world. There's too much hunger and you know, people with unclean. And he didn't know why God wasn't doing more to help the suffering, and so he just left ministry. He left it all. And Lee Strobel, who is a great apologist for the faith, I got a chance to interview this fellow near the end of his life, and he said, so now how do you reflect on all that? What's your conclusion in the whole thing? And he said, well, you know what? I really miss him, meaning Jesus. There was a time in his life when he knew Jesus. But he got in his mind something he couldn't figure out. How many have had algebra in school? How many went on to trigonometry? How many did calculus? Oh, very good. What's above calculus? I don't know. I didn't get to calculus. My point is, you get to a point where there is stuff you don't understand. You're glad somebody does, but I don't. And somewhere in life, you gotta give it over to God. There are things I don't understand. There are things that have happened that I cannot figure, but I trust Him. You know, I just give it over to Him. And in church, the funny thing is, we get mad at church people, and we condemn a whole race, church race. And we condemn them for not being loving, for not being forgiving, for not being... And guess who's not being loving? Guess who's not being forgiving? The devil has laughed again. He's got another one. And in that web. And sometimes we expect church to be the place where I'm a rock star and everybody loves me and everybody cares. And, you know, I was walking down the hall and somebody stopped and they were just crying because they loved me so much and they laid hands on me. But... you know, the reality is I came in, I was limping terribly. Nobody even asked, hey, how you doing? You know, and we get these things, you know. Why are we here? I heard yesterday on the radio, Brand Hansen and his sidekick there on the radio, they were talking about recently we've had a couple of very well-known Christians defect, say, I'm walking away from the faith. I'm no longer going to be a Christian. They wrote these manifestos on their blog. This is why. And he said he noticed about what they wrote was the church this and church people that and a bunch of hypocrites and this and that. He said, you know, the funny thing is they didn't mention Jesus in any of that. He said, my question would be, why did you come to faith in the first place? Did you think, oh, church people? Oh, churches? Stained glass. Can't get enough stained glass. Okay, and if it was Jesus that brought you to the faith, what did he do that you're walking away from him? Great question. Great question. And we have to be reminded of that. When we're done with church people and we've had enough of this and we've had enough of that, you know where we need to go, don't you? Back to the cross. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and then there's Jesus. I guess if he could do that for me, and I could put up with people for a little while longer, maybe I could do better than put up with them. Maybe I could forgive them. Maybe what I'm supposed to be doing is loving them and making a new connection. If you want to be great, you need to be motivated by love. Love thinks about others, not self. It lifts others up, sacrificing the spotlight, the honor, the applause. Paul said, short of love, you gain nothing. Have all those gifts, be very talented, be great in your own eyes. Without love, it all just stinks. I won't go there. It's a real shame to go through life with no one else you're willing to live and die for. Put yourself in the back seat. Move your mate, kids, and everything else up front. Verse 4, love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love, it never fails. Love isn't having others groveling for your attention. Love isn't having others suffering in silence because you rule the roost. Love is not getting your own way. Love is not rude. It does not boast. It is not easily angered. Been getting angry lately? Going to want to watch that. If you have to roar to get your own way, it's not worth it. If you keep asking yourself why others are not appreciating you more, if you keep throwing yourself these little pity parties, if singing the blues has become your favorite genre, you need a new operating system, and you're in the right place today. God is speaking into your heart. He's not mad at you. He's sad for you. He paints the morning sky with miracles in mind. And he's sad that you can't see that, that the hope has died, that the energy is gone. He wants to renew and restore that. If you want those deep relationships, if you want to keep waking up beside the same person until you can share your soul without shame or reservation, if you want the little ones to think you're the greatest thing since Legos, love is patient. Love is kind. It protects, trusts, hopes, perseveres. It never gives up. Be the platform lifting everyone else up. Be a cheerleader, a coach, a fan. Love is patient. Are you? Love is kind. Are you? Love perseveres. Do you? You've been tempted to give up, haven't you? Oh, you just want to throw up your hands, kick the dust off your feet. Love perseveres. I have some friends who absolutely hate their jobs. You know why they keep going back? They love their family. And they don't resent their family because they have to go to work. They take it as part and parcel. Because when you resent what you do, when you resent who you've become, you know what your family would say to you? Do us a favor. Stop doing us any favors. It takes love. It takes love. Verse 8. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when perfection comes, the imperfect disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. You'll need all three. But the greatest of these is love. Whatever gifts or talents you possess, they will come to an end. I remember my Uncle Earl was a pastor, and we always loved going to Uncle Earl's church when I was a boy. I enjoyed him preaching, and just was a wonderful fellow. And then he'd also give me a dollar whenever I saw him. And loved Uncle Earl. And after he had retired and I had pastored here for a while, one time I called him up and I said, "Hey, Uncle Earl, would you like to preach? We'd love to have you over to the church, and I'd love to hear you preach again." And he said, "Oh, Joel," he said, "thank you so much for the invitation. But I'm afraid to say that I'm at the age I just embarrassed myself. And I don't want to do that to myself nor to my Lord." And I really respected that answer from him. But I also, it just got me. Because Uncle Earl loved pastoring and he loved preaching. And he was, like I said, so good at it. But there was a point in his life where he had to lay that down and say, "No, that was great while it lasted. And whatever we do, it will someday end." And telling myself a little bit here, I remember when I first started pastoring this church 33 years ago. In those days, I would say, "I know I only have so many sermons to preach. I know I'll only be here for so long. And the day will come." Now that I'm 62, those words are so haunting, and they're breathing down my neck. Back then, 10 years seemed like an eternity. Now 10 years seems like a breath. And oh, one of these days, everything we're doing, even the frustrating, we're going to lay it down. We're going to say goodbye to it. The relationships you have when your looks, muscles, influence, positions, and youth are gone, that's the measure of a person, the relationships you have. Maybe that's the charm of growing old. You find out what you're worth. Whose home are you welcome into? Who doesn't mind doing what you can no longer do for yourself? You may have heard me say before, if we don't get there together, we don't get anywhere. It takes love. We need to care about the babies in the nursery. How are they doing? They have all the equipment they need to take care of our babies. We need to care about the people who are taking care of the babies in the nursery. Oh, it is such a wonderful blessing for mothers to be able to drop their baby off and come in. Some folk, that's the only rest their mind gets in a week's time. The babies are well taken. We need to care about our nursery workers. We need to care about the families that have our babies in the nursery. We need to care about our, our toddlers and our kids. We need to care about our preteens and our teenagers and our 20-somethings and our 30-somethings and our 40-somethings and our all the way up to their, they're in a home now somethings. Don't forget about them. That's so important. That's one message keeps coming through loud and clear from my dad whenever I talk to him. Don't forget about me. He'll say those words. Don't forget about me. Come see me. Don't forget about me. My dad was always so, you know, he did for you, you didn't do for him. But he's at a place in life where that's different now. We need to care. Don't be so busy-minded. Don't be so filled with stuff while you're here. This is our opportunity to love the people that are here. Love them on the way in, on the way out. Maybe contact them through the week. Send that text. It's so easy now to send a reminder. The relationship you have when your looks, muscles, influence, position, and youth are gone, that's the measure of a person. Stop acting like a child and care for others even if they are acting childish. This is maturity. When you're brothers and sisters, you punch each other and you know. When you're a parent, you put up with. You do whatever you need to do. I remember my brother, his son wouldn't sleep, put him in the back seat, in the car. He would sleep in the car. So John would drive him around until he'd fall asleep. And John was a salesman. He was used to driving a lot. And he said, he'd just kind of zone out and then realize, hey, the kid's been sleeping for a while. He's 100 miles away from home. What do you do with that? You just kind of pull off the side of the road, and you're sleeping in the front, and the kid's sleeping in the back till he... No worries, because he'll scream soon because the car stopped and you'll be able to go back home. But we do what we need to do. It's not like, you know what? You don't go back to the hospital and say, this one doesn't sleep. I need a new one. It's not Walmart. No guarantee. You've matured, and so you put up with the childishness. And I'm sure some of you who are my age would say, I'm glad I did. There was a time I wanted to open the door and just punt him as far as I could. Kick him. But the man he's become and the children he's born, wow, it was well worth it. Could we see each other that way? There's a lot of child left in all of us. And every once in a while, one of us is going to go rogue. I don't know if this is proper to say in church or not, but I just think it's so fitting. I had a friend who would always say, oh, I'm sorry, that was a brain fart. You'd had to agree, yeah, that's what that was. Yeah. And I'm sorry, but some of us, sometimes we have that problem. And it can be a season for a while. We talk about hormones. I don't know. But it happens. And we need to be loved even when we're a jerk. And we all take our turns being jerks. And we're starting to mature when, even while they're railing at, that's what Jesus said, bless those who curse you. Bless and do not curse. That's a very mature, you're having pity on them even while they're being angry, because you can see a little, you poor guy. I have no idea how you got to be the mess you are. You're a mess. Let me get you some coffee. Let's try to help here. You poor thing, you. You are really a jerk. Man, I've seen some jerks, but man, you are really. Let me help you out with that. Simply don't take offense. Get such a thick skin that it just doesn't. You just don't feel it anymore. Let it go. Offenses are bait from the enemy. If you got hurt, if you got angry, He got you. And you can tell because you look in some of our old church directories. I don't like looking in old church directories because they're full of pain for me. I see so many people who left for this reason, left for that reason, angry about this, upset about that. Who wins? The enemy wins. Stop taking offense. Learn to shrug. Let's do some stretches. Learn to stretch. What do you think about that? I don't think about that. Well, what do you think about it? I think sometimes my wife hates when I shrug, but I'm a good shrugger. I'm a good shrugger. There are many human actions I can't understand or explain. Why would he do that? I have no idea. Why would she say, I have no idea? That's the stupidest thing. I don't know. I can't explain myself, let alone try to explain somebody else. It's human. Why in the world would he just up and throw a rock off the bridge? That was on the news. A couple months back, a guy was walking along a bridge, saw a rock, picked it up, and threw it off and killed somebody going on the highway. Why in the world would somebody just throw a rock off of a bridge? Why did she tell her friend that boy doesn't like her? What was she thinking? You know, when there's an accident, we run like heroes. We'll run through the flames. We'll run into danger because there's a light. We don't know this person. You know, we don't interview them. We don't yell through the window, hey, are you a nice person? Are you Republican or Democrat? Who'd you vote for in the last election? Okay, I'm going to help you, all right? No. There's all kinds of videos of people running, and they will lift cars, a bunch of strangers. Just go save a life because there's something in that moment we sense this life is valuable. Why can't we love people we know if we can love strangers like that? Keep it in mind. This is still a person. They're still valuable. They're not dying. I wish they were. No, no. They're still worth rescuing. There's still hope for life. Pastor Ray just did a funeral this last week. How old was Lay? 75 years old. Had been arrested for DUI not too long ago. Came to Christ within the last couple of weeks before the family was estranged and all kind of. There's hope, hallelujah, at 75 years old to find Christ and to get things right. Don't write them off. Don't throw them away. And even if they're not drunks and savages and violent, and maybe they're church people. And they don't curse, and they don't this, and they don't that. But they really crushed your feelings when they said this or that. Can you have pity for them? Can you rise above that? Can you love them still? Cherish the people around you. Esteem them greater than yourself. Love them. When you're impatient or rude or angry, have a timeout. Take yourself out back for a little while and have a little talk with yourself and with the Lord. Oh, Lord, I don't want to feel this way. God, can you help me here? Can you calm me down? And ask the Lord to reveal to you what's really going on inside your head and inside. He'll help you. Maybe it doesn't always happen right away. But he'll start showing you. And you'll start picking up clues. And it'll start getting better for you and for the people that you love. He will help you discipline yourself and readjust your attitudes. After all, love is of God, and everybody that loves is born of God and knoweth God. As I've said before, I feel sorry for rich, powerful, beautiful, intelligent people. They've got temptations the rest of us will never need to face. But even them, if they can learn to love, if they can get self out of the way, they can also have a great life. Yes, there's hope even for them. Would you stand with me? And